I'm sorry, sir, but several rolls of toilet paper wrapped around your head like a mummy does not qualify as a mask, but I do commend you on your resourcefulness. What can I get you? Drunk? Welcome to episode 29 of Behind Bars, Cocktails, and Wasted Nights. I'm your host, Greg. I've been working as a bartender for over 20 years, and over those years, I've seen a lot. My goal here is to share some of those high and low lights with you. Quick warning, this podcast contains sex, drugs, and some language that isn't suitable for anyone under 21 years of age, so you gotta have some ID. Okay, before you head out tonight, let's arm you with a joke. This is Howie Mandel's or Gallagher's. I can't remember. I could Google it, but I'd have to burn thumb calories. Any hoozlebees, here it goes. Two guys walk into a bar, which is really dumb because you think the second guy would see the first guy do it. I don't know. The visual cracks me up. Okay, I guess some of these jokes are for me, folks. All right, before we get started, you'll need a drink. For this one, I recommend the bee's knees, because to me, the shit we're about to talk about is absolutely the bee's knees. First, chill a martini glass. In a shaker tin filled with ice, add 3/4 ounce of lemon juice, 3/4 ounce of honey simple syrup, and if you want to put a little spice in there, I really like a honey ginger syrup combo, but I digress. Finish it off with 2 ounces of your favorite gin. Shake and strain into your chilled coupe or martini glass, garnish with a lemon twist, and enjoy. And as always, if you don't have any of that shit at your pad, pour a shot of tequila and key shovel a scoop of Blizzard into your nose tube. Don't you feel so much better now? I know. Samesies. Okay, on with the story. It was 1997. I know, some of you weren't even alive then. And I just secured my off-campus apartment in Allston, a, quote, borough of Boston. It was late summer, and I'd landscaped during the day, then commute 1 hour and 15 to Boston and work an 8-hour busing shift at my brand new job at Wonder Bar and drive back at 3 a.m., only to do it all over the next day so I could save for my first month's rent in the fall. Located on Harvard Ave, Wonder Bar was a swanky jazz bar. It was beautiful inside, always with the super dim lighting, candles on every table that I lit, and amazing live jazz bands. The phone number was 351-COOL for crying out loud. My favorite band was led by the virtuoso pianist Reverend Johnny and included a sessions musician, Joe, on bass, and the legendary percussionist Harold Lane, who used to play drums for Sammy Davis Jr. Johnny drove a taxi before and after the Wonder Bar gig and would not be opposed to turning off his on-duty light and making a left turn for love at Downtown Crossing into Chinatown, where I once bought my friend a blowjob from a sex worker as a gift for letting me crash for free at his place in Queens when I worked on the Stern Show. That was a hilarious night in that the first girl I approached refused me. I mean, I've certainly been turned down by women countless times, but that one stung for obvious reasons. I mean, it stung until it became funny. Turned down by a pro? What in the actual fuck? I sat in front as Johnny drove around aimlessly. We cranked the radio so we wouldn't hear slurping noises from the back seat and turned the cab back around after we heard a loud and clear, "Thank you," from the recipient, Pete. Anyways, huge tangent. Back to Wonder Bar. It was my first time in the big city, and coming from a podunk town in the sticks and meeting these amazing people from all over the country was culture shock for sure. The girls were gorgeous and from far-flung places like San Francisco and Chicago. The bar was located between Boston College and Boston University, and I was exposed to so many cosmopolitan students with fascinating backstories. The world had just exponentially gotten so much bigger than my town of Leicester, where my graduating class numbered around 83 people. It was back when you could smoke in bars, and part of my job was changing ashtrays, breathing secondhand smoke, and bussing the food scraps left behind by rich New Yorker students who were my age, which fucked with my head. Taught me about origin, the haves and the have-nots, and I soon realized just how real my place in the world was. Hand-scooping limes, jerk chicken ort, and cigarette butts that spilled over the sink sieve into the can liner that leaked slime onto my shoes and pants on the way out to the dumpster only drove me to study as hard as I could. I developed a worldview where I saw the financially blessed as the chosen ones. They drove their BMWs above the tunnels of Boston, while I was a bottom dweller who took the T, which was the city's bus and subway system. The great thing about the tea was that it stopped running at midnight, which was a great way to get a female study buddy to stay at my place overnight as, and oh look, it's 12:15, the last train already left, was a common phrase used at my Alston digs above Pizzeria Uno. This was before cell phones, so losing track of time was a pretty frequent thing that absolutely helped my game. I worked full-time, studied full-time, and sometimes got to enjoy some naked interludes part-time. I eventually graduated from busser to barback, where I got to see the bartender life firsthand. These guys were my idols. They were so cool. They never got dirty, wore sleek black clothes, and kept Grand Marnier and snifters at their stations so they could soak their fingers and light them on fire when they would ignite a hottie's lung dart off their digits. It was magic. Looking back, I now realize how cheesy that was. But they banked cash and left with girls nightly. I wanted that so badly. Luckily, I got to pick up the ones who weren't picked up by the head honchos. Once, in an onslaught of drinking co-eds, the bartenders found themselves scrambling for liquor, beer, and glasses with yours truly nowhere to be found. Until yours truly was found. By a bartender coming downstairs to the chicken-wired liquor cage to find a bottle, only to catch me in the throes of, well, not exactly passion, but more National Geographic animalistic thrusting with a BU student I'd just met. I was drunk on the sexual power wielded by a staffer at the hottest bar in Alston. I took every opportunity afforded to me at any time I could, inopportune or otherwise. After I was made at Sophia's in episode 1, where I first became a bartender, I was soon given shifts behind the stick at Wonder Bar, as they were sister bars owned by the same man. I performed my duties under the close tutelage of Jesse the Manimal, which often resulted in a lot more tips on pickup artistry versus the ins and outs of crafting cocktails and working posi-touch on the registers. Once, our bar manager Dwight chewed Jesse out after hearing a guest complain about me making out with a patron and tracing ovals around her nether regions with an ice cube at the bar during my break in plain view of our clientele. I was basically out of control, and it was Jesse's fault, so advantage me. But I would be remiss if I didn't point out that Dwight was anything but a square. In fact, he was directly responsible for my first experience with ecstasy. It was a hot summer afternoon, and a motley crew of wee Wonder Barbarians had the night off, so we ventured down Harvard Ave to L.A., Lower Alston. We wound up in the Irish pub, The Common Ground. The gang had scored a plethora of press pills and were extolling all of their otherworldly virtues. Being from a small town, I'd only had experience with cannabis and alcohol. Okay, and some LSD. But truthfully, I was super hesitant about venturing into this mind-altering realm. But after several pints of Guinness and shots of whiskey, my sense of adventure trait, always deployed by Night Greg, took over the cockpit. I held out an open palm, and a pink pill with a Tweety Bird impression was promptly dropped into it. I popped it into my mouth and polished my pint, swallowing it down into my virgin guts. "Well," I said, "what's done is done. When's this supposed to kick in? How fast is your metabolism?" Dwight asked. Back then in my early 20s, I struggled to put on weight. So I knew the clock was ticking down in 20 minutes or so, and I began to brace myself. Within 15 minutes, I felt a synthetic warmth wash over me, noticed that Celtic music was the most beautiful thing I'd heard, and all the nerve endings on my skin seemed to sparkle from the inside out. And there was an acute amplification of the cool air from the AC's gentle breeze on my face and arms. I'd finally found all I'd ever searched for. This was it. The pinnacle of everything. Then I heard everyone laughing at me and noticed them pointing toward me. "Oh my God, look at that grin. Studley is rolling. He's rolling hard." Yep, I sure was. My lips were stretched wide to the point of tearing, my teeth were clenched, and I'd never been happier. I soon realized I was obvious and unfit for public consumption, so I let my instincts take over. I chugged some water and ran out the door. I heard an, "Oh shit, follow him." They sent out a tail while Dwight took care of the tab. I sprinted up the sidewalk and lost my pursuers in the crush of summer day-drinking pedestrians, dodging them like OJ in that old Hertz commercial. I was a leaf on the wind. I needed to be alone. I found out they checked every bar for me, including Wonder Bar, where the info was relayed that I was on my first roll and they couldn't find me. Until they did. I hadn't gone that far. They all eventually discovered me in front of my apartment, lying shirtless on the devil's strip of crabgrass and broken glass that I thought felt like pillowy sod between the sidewalk and street, gently tickling my bare chest with a sock. I was in my glory and had all I needed. Dwight, being experienced in these, experiences, fetched me a glass of water from inside. Drink this so you don't get dehydrated, he said. I sat up and asked for another press pill. He hesitated. I'll make you a deal. If we can go inside, I'll hook you up. I guess passers-by were starting to gawk. I hoisted myself upright, and he acquiesced and handed me over another tab, this one with the Mitsubishi emblem stamped onto it. I dropped that, and as I rolled harder, he became the de facto drug dad babysitter until my roommate Neil got home. Dwight wanted to go to another bar and handed me off to Neil, who was happy to take over as my antics apparently amused the living fuck out of him. Of course, he did it for a small fee, 2 press pills for Neil. Okay, gotta give you some context here. Neil was the cock of the walk at Wonder Bar. Super handsome, an amazing bartender, and more often than not, brought a really hot companion home just about every night. And another important need to know. I'd moved from above the Pizzeria Uno into a triple-decker with a yard. And living across the street from our digs on Greylock Road were a group of sexy-as-fuck BU girls who occupied the top floor. They would come to Wonder Bar and flirt with Neil, and he and I spent many a night smoking cigarettes on our front porch as they unabashedly changed and passed by their windows in all their topless glory, and I swear to this day, they did it on purpose. It had to be intentional. Whatever it was, ignorance or intention, we got a show in those late summer nights. Okay, what follows is what will sound like a letter to Penthouse sexual fantasy fiction. I promise you, just as all of my episodes have been and will continue to be, this is 1,000% true. But if you don't believe me, I completely understand. Fuck, I still don't believe it. The sun had set and Neil and I were rolling, now on actual manicured grass in our backyard, drinking Red Stripes and discussing life mysteries and how fucked up we were. Then we both heard it. The sound of frolicking coming from the street, girls laughing and squealing in delight. Oh man, whatever could the cause of this joy be? We quickly got up and ran around the house to the front, and there it was. I couldn't have asked for or conjured up a better sight to behold. It was our 3 girl neighbors wearing oversized white t-shirts over bikinis having a fucking squirt gun fight. I shit you not. See-through, clingy. It was like an out-of-the-pages Playboy pictorial come to life. I loved it. If you didn't think I was already committed to this drug, I was now ready to marry it. Neil hung back and watched in pure pride as I ran into the crossfire, taking shots to my naked torso. Hey, mind if we play? I asked. We're rolling. They giggled and said, of course we could play. We can play, Neil, I yelled up to the porch, but Neil was nowhere to be found. Moments later, he emerged from the house. Studley, get us some squirt guns, Neil yelled back. I was 15 yards ahead of him, already sprinting barefoot toward Calm Ave. I crossed the train tracks, dodged the opposite lane of traffic like fucking Frogger, and ran inside CVS, my eyes screwed up, eliminating the irrelevant aisles. I found the general merchandise shelf and closed fast. There they were. Like a shelf full of Red Ryder BB guns, a host of Super Soaker water cannons hung on the shelf, shining in the light of angels. I grabbed the biggest one they had, its barrel the size of a silver half dollar in diameter, and I snagged Neil a 99-cent Derringer. Yeah, I'm a dick, but I ran across train tracks and was standing in the store barefoot, so fuck him. I completed the $30 purchase somehow and ran back. We filled up. Obviously, Neil got out there a lot faster, as my water clip was the size of a Tour de France cyclist bottle. I entered the fray, and as soon as I found myself taking shots of cool water against my dazzled skin in this fucking erotic shootout, my knee-jerk, uncontrollable sense of competition took over. Yeah, of course I'd fuck this one up. Fucking Greg. Instead of enjoying the light shots we took at one another, dodging, strafing, and laughing, I somehow turned into fucking Rambo and started jerking off the pump action of my water cannon at an unreasonable rate, drenching the girls, getting headshots, some streams half choking them with direct hits into their faces. Easy, Studley, Neil yelled. Fuck that, I thought. This was fucking war, and I was mowing everyone down on this night. The girls eventually surrendered and went inside because I was playing too hard. Neil followed them to the porch, apologized for my overenthusiastic gameplay, and invited them over for beers. And they agreed, and this is where I really blew it. I don't know how many of my listeners out there have taken ecstasy, but anecdotally, I've heard of people having the same hallucinogenic journeys as I have. Anytime I shut my eyes, I'd immediately be immersed into a waking dream, like full immersion. We all lay on the grass, having a wonderful conversation about fuck all, and I'd let my heavy eyelids close. Their voices sounded so close, yet so far. They'd all slip into the background as I was inserted into my mind's dream. This would all be fine until I acted in that dream, like out loud, in front of everyone. "How's he doing?" one of the babes asked. It wasn't lost on me that she didn't ask me directly, by the way. She knew any response I had ready to go would be ridiculous. "Studley? Ah, looks like he's doing great," Neil said, prompting laughter from all enjoying my ear-to-ear grin and chattering teeth. Meanwhile, what Studley was doing in his mind... fuck third person. My mind? Well, let me tell you what I was going through. On the black screen of my eyelids, a scene jumped to life in full Technicolor reality. I was an executive in the offices of the NBC network presiding over a meeting. It was so vivid. I stood, wearing a linen suit, leaning against my desk, and pardon the expression, between two ferns, as I was breaking news to some sitcom stars we had under contract. I know, this is really fucked up, but on my fucking life, this is what was going on in my head. I was breaking the news that the show wasn't doing well in the ratings and that they'd be moved from Thursday night to Fridays. And that's when I heard myself interrupt the real-life conversation with, "Bummer about the show, you guys, but at least you're not getting canceled. We're just trying out a new time slot." God is my witness, I said that out loud. Then I woke myself up after I heard what I just said. I looked at the girls, one of whom stopped passing a joint to Neil and squinted her disbelieving eyes at me. They were all staring. "Dude, what?" She then blew out her hit in staccato laughter, and everyone else joined in. I began to explain, but there was no use. I knew I just had to keep my eyes open for the rest of the night, otherwise I'd see and star in my little movies. But it was no use. After a couple more act-outs, I figured it was time I excused myself so I could be alone in my room to experiment with this sorcery. And to jerk off. Because holy shit, I felt great. The girls eventually went home, and Neil had patched it all up. A week later, they threw a rave in their backyard and came over to invite both of us. Neil took two of the girls home, but I hung out at the party socializing. When I came home, I found Neil in the bathtub getting his ponytailed coif shaved bald by them. That has nothing to do with anything, but it illustrates just how weird we got. But yeah, when I roll, I'm pretty much a babe in the woods and should probably wear a helmet. Years later, when I was driving across the country from Boston to LA, my roommate and I stopped for a spell in Vegas and decided to hit Babies, the club at the Hard Rock. I had about 30 press pills in my Mega Man vitamin bottle for the journey. I was rolling my tits off. We ended up meeting these girls and started making out with them. Then they started making out with each other and pretty much forgot we were there. Bummed out, Damien made his way to the bar and I scoped out a seat. As I waited, I lit up a cigarette. The polite guy next to me offered me an ashtray, and when I reached out to grab it, I realized I was grabbing and pulling on his shoe. Wasn't an ashtray at all. "Sorry, I'm rolling," I said, and got up and left. As I looked for Damien everywhere, I got a little tired and decided to plant my hands onto a seat back and lean for a bit. However, as soon as I leaned, I discovered it wasn't the back of a chair, it was a woman's head. Oh boy, Greg, you better get out of here. When I tried to extricate myself from that awkward situation, I fell. To the applause of everyone watching. Thankfully, the bouncers got me to my feet, then the door, because I needed to leave 20 minutes earlier. The fresh air felt amazing, and soon Damien found me. We decided it would be a good idea to head to the after party at the Spearmint Rhino. I remember two things. Seeing Corey Feldman walking in past the line with a couple hot blondes, and once inside, passing an absolute babe in shimmery clingy pants, a tight shiny bra-like top, fuck, I wish I knew girl wardrobe terminology, her hair and pigtails, sparkling eye makeup and lipstick, sucking on a lollipop. I was smitten. At this point, I should tell you, I had no idea Spearmint Rhino was a strip club. I thought it was one of those stupid club night nights names being held in the joint. I mean, I don't remember seeing stages or poles in the section of the building where we were. It was just a dance floor with booths. I mean, I think. It's a little blurry. Point is, I checked her out up and down as we almost passed each other in the nuts-to-butts crowd. She checked me out up and down, too. "Hi," I said. "Hi yourself," she said. "Want to dance?" she asked. Fuck my life. I can't dance to save my life. At all. I've never been able to bring myself to try. I don't even attempt moves privately in my apartment. My move is conversation. Jokes. Loud packed places are my kryptonite. I didn't want to blow it with Space Baby, though, and I had about 1 second before she moved on to other options. What to do? What to do? I confidently whisper yelled into her ear. I don't really know any moves, but if you want to show me some stuff in the corner, we can try it and bring it to the dance floor. Idiot. Then she grabbed my hand and led me to a seat in the corner and sat me down. She then started grinding on me, seductively sucking on that lollipop, never breaking eye contact. Which sucked because I wanted to feast my eye teeth on her awesome bod. Man, this was going well. But how was I going to learn moves sitting down? Then she took off her shiny top thingy, unleashing a perfect pair of artificially enhanced breasticles. Oh shit, wait a second. What are you doing? I asked. I'm giving you a lap dance, hun. What did you think? I thought you liked me, I said. Babe in the woods. You know you're in a gentleman's club, right? I do now. Fuck. How much is this going to cost me? 150 so far, she said. Okay, I groaned. Keep going. We ended up hanging out and exchanging numbers, and I got some cash back selling her E the next day, so point me, kinda. Anyways, back to Boston. It was study hard, work hard, and party hard, and I soon got a reputation as a fun dude to hang out with, which was fine by me. Once my friend Scotty, the best nine-fingered bartender you ever saw, got wind that I could hang, so we soon became partners in crime. We would hang at his place till 9 in the morning doing all the things with all the people, and these will be the settings of future episodes. But it's getting late, so here's one last quick one for you. After one after party, around 3:30 in the afternoon, I had to get it together and go to work, and he called out, "Hey Studley, you gonna be okay for your shift?" And I said, "Wait, what?" And he said, "I didn't say anything." Ah, shit. "Hey, general public, here comes your bartender." Well, it's last call, so let me give you a tip. Order your booze, then your mixer. Don't say Coke and rum. It's a fucking rum and Coke. Bartenders work on visualization as you order, so if you fuck up the way we build your drink in our mind's eye, you're sending everything sideways. Or maybe that's just the ecstasy talking. Folks, it's been a blast. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. And a call to my fellow booze slingers. Send in your stories to cocktailsandwastednights@gmail.com. You can remain anonymous if you'd like. Thanks for listening, subscribing, downloading, and spreading the word. Don't be afraid to give me a good review, even if you're lying. If you want to support the podcast, check it out on Patreon. I don't have any extra shit there, but I'll happily accept donations. Worth a try. Oh, and check out my video, Just Close It, on YouTube. We'll see you next time on Behind Bars, Cocktails and Wasted Nights. Cheers. And if you don't have any of that shit lying at your... And I just secured my... And amazing live jazz bands. And included a sessions musician's Joe on... Fucking Christ almighty, what am I talking about? I mean, I've certainly been town by... I sat in front of Johnny... Oh, Jesus Christ, no I didn't. It was my first time in the big city, and coming from a Podak... The great thing about the T was that it stopped running at midnight, which was a great way to get female student buddy... Oh, Jesus Christ almighty, that's not even... Which often resulted in a lot more tips on pickup artistry versus the ins and out of crafting... God damn it. An acute amplification where the inflow... inflow. I was 15 yards ahead of him, already sprinting barefoot. Eliminating the irrel... I know, this is really fucked up, but on my fucking life, this was... The fresh air felt amazing, and soon Dane...